Okay. This was a very intense weekend for the Jewish people for a number of reasons. There's not a political discussion about the results of the election, which already been finished. Apparently, I don't really fully get that one. It's more of the loss of life that we experienced as a nation. Two very big gedolim and different walks of Judaism, different groups, passed away this past weekend. From David Feinstein, who again, a gadol b'Torah, one of the gadol hador, of Jonathan Sachs. But the truth is that the Ali Shor brings down that there are many, many great gedolim that you may never have heard of beforehand. Their works weren't so famous, they weren't chief rabbis, that also had have a tremendous hashpah, a tremendous influence on people, and also their loss is a loss that affects Klal Yisrael. Chazal tell us, the Gemara Brachos brings down, the Marsha quotes this, that Hashem also davens. Hashem says, "Base tefillah see, my place of tefillah. Not my house where you daven, my house where I daven." And regarding that, the Marsha explains, what happens to Hashem's base tefillah? What happens over there? And the Marsha explains that the nefashos of tzaddikim, the neshamos of tzaddikim, are offered on an altar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to appease, to give kapara, to give refuah for Klal Yisrael. We had, again, this past weekend, two very big losses that I'm aware of, that are known, well known throughout the Jewish world. And hopefully, those experiences that we've grown from them in their lifetime, and now in their passing, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us all a kapara and a refuah shalema. I had one experience in my life, personally, with Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. Rabbi Sachs, about 8-9 years ago, the yeshiva went to a lecture. Rabbi Sachs was giving in Yerushalayim. We took the yeshiva wherever we wanted to go. And we got there and we missed it. This is my personal experience with Rabbi Sachs. We missed it. They changed the time on us. We sent the buses. I was zochev on the bus with a bunch of rowdy guys who were very unhappy. The schedule didn't match up with what they told us originally. And we missed it. And Rabbi Sachs is walking out now with like a lot of people protecting him or walking around him. And I've got these 65, 70 boys who are disgruntled. So I kind of like got through the first round of bodyguards. I said, Rabbi Sachs, I'm asking, can I ask a big favor? A mistake happened. We were misinformed about the timing. Would you just speak to our guys for just a 2-minute thing, a bracha? And he stopped everything he was doing. He's a very busy man. And all the 80 guys, just our yeshiva, gathered around him. They gave us 15, 20 minutes of just a shmooze. An unbelievable kindness and care for every single person. And I was zochet experienced that piece a little bit. That one time I had the skill of interacting with him. As I mentioned earlier on, there are people that we never heard of beforehand, who also play a major role in Klal Yisrael. And I had the experience yesterday of going to a funeral of a Rebbe of mine, who taught me ritual lessons back in Silver Spring, Maryland. And they announced that you shouldn't come to the funeral due to corona issues. And I decided I'm going to go anyways. And if it's a lot of people there, I'm not going to stay. I think it was Rabbi Millen is his name. What was his name? Rabbi Millen taught everyone that I knew of our ritual lessons, including me. And as I'm walking, the minhag in Yerushalayim and in Beit Shemesh as well is that the family does not walk with the body, they go ahead of the body. And when they said everyone in the family should go ahead of the body, it was like me and the Chevra Kedisha that was left to walk the body to its final resting place. And I'm here walking with my former bar mitzvah teacher, who I haven't seen in many, many years. And in Israel, it's not like in America when you have a casket that's, it's a clothes and you see a coffin. There is no coffin, there's a body. It's the shape of a body, there's a towel wrapped around it, and you carry or you wheel the body. I'm sitting here staring at my bar mitzvah teacher as I'm walking with him. And I had a tremendous amount, we weren't so close, but I had a tremendous amount of like, just emotion. I'm sure you could probably imagine. I'm like, I don't know, why said to me, what's like, I know, it's a sad thing, but why are you so affected by this? So I said, this rabbi and I had a very traumatic moment in my life. I'm going to tell you a story right now that some people know it already. So I'll explain to you why I'm sharing it with you. Our mitzvah parsha, our mitzvah lesson, Rabbi Millen taught me, he was an older, older man. He wasn't like so with it, I guess, of what kids how we play shtick sometimes. And he would test me every week. He'd give me parsha to lane, and I would lane it, I would practice it. And then he would test me, and I would read from the fake side. I'd read from the side with the vowels on it. For about 10 months, I just faked my whole way through my mitzvah lessons. Every time he's like, he knows it very well, call it kavod. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I have no idea what I'm going to do when my parsha comes up. It was a secret that only I knew, no one else knew. I didn't tell my friends. I did not tell my parents. I told nobody. Imagine in your life going through with a secret that only you know about. And it eats away because, you know, at some point in time, you're going to be found out. I'll never forget, on Tuesday, my mitzvah was on a Shabbos, as most of us are. On Tuesday that week, I'm walking up my street, Lovejoy Street, in Silver Spring, Maryland, thinking to myself, what in the world am I going to do? And I hatched up a genius of a plan. Or so I thought at the time when I was 12 years old. I'm going to lane beautifully the first three aliyos because I could. I did it so many times, I knew it by heart at that point in time. Now, half the parsha was Shishi and Shvi, which I did not know at all. And I'll start to, you know, start to like clear my throat during Shani. Shishi, like, you know, I need some water. And by RV, I'm out. Bring the left ear from the bullpen. I got to have someone else take over. I got to save myself for the Haftorah and for Musaf. That was my plan. Okay. Would it have worked? I don't know. But on Thursday, 2 days later, two days beforehand, the rabbi says to me and my father, come to the shul. I want to hear your voice project from the shul. Respect. Good idea. It's important to make sure I could hear all the areas of the Shomer Emunah in Silver Spring, Maryland. All the ladies, my grandparents, could hear me through all the different sections. So I'm glad to accept that offer. I go to shul, and he takes out the Torah, which has only one side on it, it's got the second side, there's no vowels in that one. But I can read Risho and Shani, as I told you already, fine. And so I read the first Aliyah beautifully. I said, okay, let's go home. He goes to me, keep on going. Keep on going? Why? Like, you heard me project, I don't want to ruin my voice at this point in time. No, keep on going. Okay, so I read Shani, and I started my original, like, clear my throat move. It's bothering me. I don't want to, you know, I've got a whole audience to please on 2 days from now. Cut me some slack. No, keep on going. The time I got to Ravi, I was done. I was done. This rabbi says to me, like, you don't know it. I'm like, yeah, I know that. I know this for a long time already. And he outed me in front of my dad. My dad says to me, he goes, you're an embarrassment to our family. And I'm like, what? Like, that's pretty bad. Like, our family's like, you know, it's a pretty bad thing to be embarrassed to my family. Couldn't believe it. Sure enough, my ritzel comes, and my whole family is toasting Friday night meal for my ritzel. I'm upstairs in my room, a mixture of crying and preparing. And I finally woke up about 6 in the morning, Shabbos day, for my last half aliyah. Okay, I got through it. I made plenty of mistakes, but no one was the wiser. When I said later on to Rabbi Miller, when I saw him in the future, I said, remember that time when I faked you the whole time? He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He denied it. It was not macabre that I did that. It's not macabre. Now, I'm sitting walking this man who, again, I can only tell you, I don't know if any of you have a secret that only you know about yourselves. I cannot tell you the pain that it causes you to feel stuck with no one to share it with. And I'm walking my Rav who saved me. Unbeknownst to him, the embarrassment and the busha. I don't know what would have happened had I not got caught. I don't know what would have happened. I wish someone would say to me before Ritz, I wish someone would have said to me, just so you know, don't try this move at home. It's only going to be disaster. If they don't catch you, then you're going to embarrass yourself and your family. If they do catch you, then you have so much to make up for it. It's just not worth it. I wish someone would have given me that pep talk, but probably no one in the world ever thought that someone needed a pep talk like that, because most people know you prepare your ritual because you don't have a choice in the matter. I missed the memo. And walking this Rav to his final resting place, I realized how much I owed him. Because I can picture the following scene happening. I get up there, humiliate myself, my family, remember shul being a place that I feel humiliated in. Not wanting to go anymore. Fighting my parents on it. Who knows where it takes you? And this Rav saved me. Why am I telling this to you right now? What's the kesher between this parsha What's the kesher between the upcoming few days we're going to have off? In Parsha Chayei Sarah, the Siva Shalom has an unbelievable mahalach he goes through. It's pretty well known. I'm going to share with you right now very briefly and explain to you why I think it's very relevant to my story and to the next few days we're going to have together. He asks six questions right off the bat. First piece he has in the Parsha. Number one, he goes through, he says, that as we describe Sarah's years, and we describe 127 years, we say again, Shnei Chayei Sarah. We never do this. We never tell you the Imaos years they lived. No one else has it, just Sarah. And we say Chayei Sarah twice. Why am I saying Chayei Sarah, Vayu Chayei Sarah? And then we say that now, we say Shnei Chayei Sarah a second time. It's a small cuff. Those of you who've laid it or saw the Parsha, it says that Avram came now to eulogize Sarah, Vilivkosa, with a small cuff. Why is there a small cuff there? So the Baal Turim explains there's a small cuff there because he didn't cry so hard for her. He didn't cry. She lived a nice life. He didn't cry too much for her. Why is that significant? I would imagine the longer you live together, the more painful it is when you've lost that partner of yours for life. Why is that the point to raise over here? Rashi points out that the juxtaposition between last Parsha of Vayera, Akedas Yitzchak, and this Parsha is that the story goes that Og went to tell Sarah as to what exactly happened, and Avram almost slaughtered Yitzchak, and she had a heart attack and she died. Something to that effect. Now, that's found in Rashi in our Parsha, but it's not mentioned right away in Rashi. Rashi mentions it not when she died, but when he mourned over her. Why doesn't Rashi mention it right away, says the Nesiva Shalom? When she died. She died as a result of what happened with Akedas Yitzchak. He waits till the mourning discussion. Why? Also, we have a concept. People who do mitzvahs are protected. How could his mitzvah, Avram, of Akedas Yitzchak, how could that result in a terrible, untimely passing of his wife? Where's that showing protection? And finally, the last thing he questions is that we know that Sarah was a greater Nevi'ah than Avram was a Navi. After all, Hashem tells Avram, listen to your wife. So Avram gets a test, passes the test, and Sarah hears it and dies? Just hearing about it? The Nevi'ah scale doesn't seem to be working with that concept. Those are all his questions that he asks. And he gives one answer. He gives one answer that explains all these questions. We say in Maariv, before we daven Shemoneh Esrei, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vaser Satan milfneinu miacharinu. Remove the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, from in front of me and from behind me. What does it mean to remove a Satan from behind me or in front of me? Says Nesiva Shalom, it means that before you do an action in your life, there's a satan that wants you to stop it. Don't do the mitzvah. As a matter of fact, in the Kedas story, there's so many things that happened that Avram was supposed to stop in theory. The satan tried to convince him, don't do this. How could you? How about the promise Hashem made you're going to have a family? You're killing your family right now. Doesn't make any sense. Hashem was just testing you. And there was a big flood of water that didn't let him walk through. There was constant tests in advance of Avram doing the mitzvah. And he passed with flying colors. And it should be game over, but it's not. There's one more chance that we have to have Avram fail Akedas Yitzchak. That's acharenu. That's remove the satan from behind me. Meaning, after I do a mitzvah, and I feel good about what I did, if I come to regret it later on, if I regret it, then I did tshuva on my mitzvah. Tshuva on the Vera means the Vera is like it's not done at all. I regret doing it. It's like it's out. I'm forgiven. But tshuva on the mitzvah has the same effect. I wish I hadn't done that mitzvah. My wife died as a result of my mitzvah. I wish I hadn't done that mitzvah. Oh, the satan has a chance to get him me'acharenu. And therefore, really Sarah died because it was her time to die. It lists her years because this is the max amount of time she's supposed to live. Shnei Chayei Sarah repeated a second time. She lived out her life entirely. Avram didn't cry over her like a person who felt responsible for his wife's death. He recognized this wasn't something that I did. Shluchei mitzvah, people who do mitzvahs are not hurt by the mitzvah that they do. She didn't die as a result of his mitzvah. And that's why Rashi, Davka, mentions it not right away. because it's not true. It wasn't really how the death was caused. It just had the appearance of that. So Avram, for one last chance, one last test in this difficult mitzvah, would he pass this test or not? He passed it with flying colors. V'aser sam lufneinu, before we do anything wrong, v'yacharenu, after we chose well, we should never regret our choices. The Ali Shore points out, or Volbe points out, that we are in an army. We are in the army. We work in the army of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's our army. We have Madaim, we have a uniform. Tzitzis, Tefillin, Kippah, a uniform. We have demands and expectations of us in our army. That's both all Jews in the world, and particularly B'nai Torah. You guys have this chus of being called B'nai Yeshiva. The fact that your yeshiva is Torah Shraga is just an additional name, but B'nai Yeshiva. As B'nai Yeshiva, that puts you in a unique category of people serving Hashem's army. Because everybody gets to watch you. Some want you to succeed, and some would love you to fail. Many would love you to fail. But you're wearing right now a uniform that you asked for when you come to yeshiva. It's called, you're in the platoon of B'nai Yeshiva. I asked a student of mine, Alex Hurt, right before I gave the shmooze, what are the rules of someone in the army who's off? What are the rules when you're not in the army, like you have a weekend off? What are some rules? Rule number one, he told me, is that you're not allowed to drink while you're wearing a uniform. You take your uniform off, you're wearing civilian clothes, you can drink. But not while you're wearing a uniform. You're wearing a uniform, you have to be tucked in. You cannot be untucked when you're wearing a uniform. You want to wear civilian clothing? You can. But not when you're wearing a uniform. You have a gun. In the army, you have a gun. You have to dismantle your gun if it's not on you and put it behind two locks, two locked areas. Rules, basic rules for someone who's in the army but on a little time off. We don't have a uniform we take on and we take off. Our uniform is our title. We are B'nai Yeshiva. Anyone who sees you guys around knows that you are people who are from somewhere else, not Israel, and you're the age of those people studying in yeshiva. If you have your uniform on 24/7, you walk off campus, you are a Ben Yeshiva, your uniform is on whether you like it or not. There are rules when you have a uniform on, when you express being a Ben Yeshiva. You look like a mensch. Look like it matters to you, like you have pride in what you're doing. Drinking is an example of behaving in a way that represents a level of appreciation and care and concern for the task that you have at hand. You're a Ben Yeshiva, it means you act like a Ben Yeshiva in and out. And you double lock any area that's dangerous. You double lock it. It's an army rule. A threat to you or someone else, double locked. Break it apart. Separate it. Avoid it like the plague. That's the rule of the army. And you are in an army. You're in the army of B'nai Yeshiva. You must walk with this in your mind the entire time through. The rule, if you are caught in the army, violating these rules varies from prison time, from fines to prison to worse. It's not a speech about threatening you, what happens if. If you have a pride that you fought to come to Eretz Yisrael in a very difficult year, and you are zocha to be drafted as very special members of this army, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you have to make sure that you do your best to represent it properly. As I mentioned to you earlier, I wish someone educated me when I was bar mitzvah age how to act. Not to play around, it's just not worth it. I wish. No one did, and so I suffered through it. And again, when I say that I had trauma, I cannot describe to you every waking day before bar mitzvah, how I was like, what am I going to do? So you have a big opportunity in front of you before you leave. is that you pick someone's brain. What do I do? How do I make sure that I handle this part well? How do I act like a Ben Torah? I'm not used to it. More than I'm not used to it, even. I'll tell you an interesting thing. Rabbi Olson showed me in the car on the way here. I don't want to be spoiler alert if you guys didn't know what happened in the Jets game. Jets and the Patriots last night. But towards the end of the game, a Patriot receiver caught a pass. 3 seconds left in the middle of the field. And he's down on one knee. He's down on the ground. And there's one time out left, but the play hasn't been blown dead yet. And a Jet guy touches him. He's down. All of a sudden, timeout. And the clock stops. Now, the chachma, if a guy catches the middle of the field, 3 seconds left in the game, he's at the 30-yard line, don't touch him. Let him get up, scribble his feet, wait 3 seconds, then tackle the guy, and there's no timeouts left. But you know how hard it is to fight every fiber of your being? You've always been trained and taught and excited to tackle the guy on the ground. It's nearly impossible to fight. You're like, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to touch the guy. He doesn't get up. But there's a different scenario right now. Different reality. We had the same thing happen in the Super Bowl 46. Thank you to Aaron Lubat for showing me this video beforehand. Ahmad Bradshaw, towards the end of the game. He's running to the end zone, and it's open for him. Little time on the clock left. There's a chance. If you just stall it, you're going to win the game for sure. There's no timeouts left. And you watch him do this. He realizes, oh my gosh, I got the end zone, and he kind of tries stopping, and he can't, and he falls into the end zone. If you haven't seen it yet, you should watch it. It's humorous. Because your whole life you've been trained to head to the end zone. And all of a sudden you realize it's not the right time anymore. I shouldn't be doing this. But you can't fight your natural urge that you've always been used to doing from this point that you've been trained since you carry your ball in peewee, the peewee leagues, until the NFL. You're fighting every fiber of your being. Why am I telling this to you right now? It's super hard to come to yeshiva, not be out for a long, long time. And I know everyone here came with two goals in mind, at least, to learn Torah, to listen to Hashem, and to have fun. If I had to ask you where you put those two goals, you know, each one's different. Each one's very different. But I imagine many of you were hoping for the time to get out of yeshiva, finally get out of yeshiva, to be able to enjoy myself. And every fiber of your being that you've been trained for with your friends has been ready for this moment in time. And you see yourself heading to the thing, the guy's on the ground, you gotta touch him. The end is open, you just gotta do your dance and get in there. But at this point in time, it's the wrong call. It's a bad call. If only someone could share with you how bad a call that would be right now. Only someone who is a little more experienced than you could explain to you how big a mistake that would be right now. This is a serious time milfaneinu, not meacharenu. But I also mentioned we're giving you the opportunity to go somewhere right now to have some time that you deserve. You need to learn this special few days. What it means as a person wearing the soldier uniform of a Ben Yeshiva. Do not let your natural touchdown, tag that when he's down, don't let that take over your mind. It's the bad call. It's a bad call right now. Ask anybody. Ask anybody who knows. Ask anybody who wants Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your world to be the highlight of your year. Ask anybody. They'll tell you the same thing. This is a mistake you do not want to make. And you're going to have friends around you who are going to do it. Hopefully none in this room. Hopefully. To be a Ben Yeshiva is the biggest privilege that you have. And you fought to get here. You should fight just as hard, if not harder, to keep that title unblemished and untainted. That means that every fiber of your being is going one direction, and you figure out how to not pull Ahmad Bradshaw and say out of the end zone so that the clock runs out and you win automatically. And you are a superstar. Otherwise, you're not a Ben Yeshiva. You lost the title because you behaved in a way that doesn't represent what you're supposed to be doing yourselves. give you all a bracha, and we have ultimate confidence in each of you. You should be wise enough, strong enough, brave enough to spend this Bein HaZmanim to refresh, to recharge. We come back with great stories, clean, appropriate, of how we were able to take the time off, spend time together as yeshiva and out of yeshiva, and get what this time is supposed to be for ourselves. I wish you all much hatzlach and bracha. Your Rebbeim are here. Your Shadabek guys are here to shmooze you about it. If you have any questions at all, I'd love to help you with it. Have a great day.